A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Welcome to Goalie Science, the podcast that bridges the gap between goaltending, science, and peak performance. I'm your host, Jamie Phillips, a former professional goalie, currently pursuing a doctorate in physical therapy and specializing in goalie performance coaching. Joining me as always is Dr. Ben Cernik, a seasoned goalie coach and sports analytics specialist. Whether you find yourself at home, on the road, or at the rink, grab a cup of your favorite beverage and let's drop the puck on this week's episode. Welcome to another episode of the Goalie Science Podcast. It's an in-person episode. I'm flying solo again because Ben refuses to travel to America to do interviews with me. But I'm joined with Roman Malkoff. This one's a unique episode because now we can kind of dive a little bit into a bunch of different scenarios, talking about growing up in Russia, the Russian goalie development model, playing in North America, making that transition, as well as being a college coach, working with hockey agency. There's so many avenues in which I want to take this. So Roman, thank you for joining me.
Thanks.
Tell the people right now, like, who are you? What's your backstory? Like, let's just get into it.
Well, a backstory. Wow. So my name is Roman. So I moved here in the States about 10 years ago. The overall goal was to get to college and kind of have an open avenue to play professional, like we always do and always try to. The college part worked out. Professional didn't work out, but that's all right. I was growing up in Yaroslavl, Russia. Team called Lokomotiv. Look at my team. Actually, how the system work in Russia, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but so you have the main KHL team and you have the whole academy behind it, right? You have all the ages, kind of the same thing as AAA works here. And you have a junior league as well. So from really like mites to U18 junior league and the main team. So it's kind of a very nice system that if you want to stay with one club, you can travel, you can graduate for the agent through the academy, go to the junior team and kind of move into the KHL team. So progression is there. So they're not all of the KHL teams have that, but most do. I started there and I played in Lokomotiv until I was 14. Then I had an opportunity to go to play in Moscow for 2 years. So I moved there, played there for 2 years in a team called Rus, like Rus, R-U-S-S. Yeah, that's very patriotic. Anyway, fantastic team. We had a few guys that made it really far from that team. Still have a good contact with them. And then I had an opportunity to come here. So that's when about 16 years old that I moved here on my own. It was a long time ago. So we didn't really, I had a flip phone. Okay. Sony Ericsson.
So you're dating yourself.
Yeah. Well, yes. I didn't have a lot of money back then and all that stuff. Had an iPad, and that was the first iPad. So I didn't have like cellular connection or whatever. And the only thing I could do is to get a Wi-Fi to do any form of translation. Yeah. No English. I had
no English.
Hello, how much? That's it.
Oh,
and you tell me 12, I would say, I don't know. No clue. So, I mean, there's a lot of funny stories with not knowing English in high school that they put me in, whatever. But anyway, we're not going to get into too much in that. We're going to sit there all day. But, yeah, so move there. And you're supposed to be playing U16 Wilkes-Barre Scranton Knights. That didn't work out. For whatever reason, so we're not going to go into it. And so they found me a junior team. So as a 16-year-old, I was playing in the junior team, Wilkes-Barre Miners. I have no idea what league what that was. Absolutely no recollection of that. I don't think the team even exists nowadays.
There's a lot of those junior teams that no longer exist.
So, and that year was really, really difficult. So first year, not a whole lot of English, not a whole lot of understanding of how the system worked, where I'm even playing. It was hilarious. So it was like NA3.
Okay.
Somewhere there.
Tier 3 level.
Yes. Okay. So somebody told me, like, because we were skated where the rink is where the AHL team for Pittsburgh practicing. Whatever conversation of bad English that I had, I thought that I got into AHL team. 16. So I'm coming in. So these two guys, two goalies were there. And I was like, and Fleury used to play on that, back there. So I was like, so do you know Fleury? He's like, yeah, I know Fleury. I was like, oh my God. I'm so pumped. I'm so pumped to go in the, on the ice. And I go on the ice. I was like, these guys don't seem to be very good. This guy has a different socks on. I was like, this is not very organized. Very quickly learned that it's not AHL team. So it was just, it was a madness looking back, and it's crazy. But after that season, when finally it was over, really tried hard for the local team, for the U18 team, the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Knights. I didn't make it. And, I said, fine. My dad flew here to Pennsylvania, and we went on tryout tour. The biggest tryout tour is Detroit, and all the majority of teams are there. Coaches there said, you guys, you're just crazy. You didn't even make our team, and we're, these Detroit teams are in the top 20 or whatever. It turns out I'm main Beltire and played there 2 years. After that, played some junior hockey in many places, and I end up in Aquinas College in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and graduated there, and I met a beautiful girl, and now she's my wife, and now we have a beautiful daughter, and I met Jamie.
End the story.
End the story, done.
Okay, there's many things I want to get back to. So, first is... I have a lot of questions from a lot of European kids, European goalies, wondering how do they get over to North America. So, from what's your personal experience, and then any advice or avenues that goalies and players listening can take to make those first steps to get some exposure, introduction into some sort of level here in North America.
That's a great question. So, right now I am on the side, even when I was in college, I was helping a lot of kids from Russia to get here. So my whole point, because overall kind of goal, to give them an ability who wants it and who is able to perform and afford and all those things, get here, and their goal is to play in the States and go further. So I was able to help them to get to Fox, to get to Detroit teams. So... because my experience was really difficult because I didn't know anything.
Did you just like hop on a plane and show up? Did you send emails? Like how did that connection in Wilkes-Barre start?
So the first connection happened where a friend of mine, Ivan Provorov.
Not a big deal.
He went, and two other kids, Nikita Pavlichev, that he played in. He actually still plays. He plays in AHL. Yes. So they went, and they knew somehow the coach there, and so these guys went early, like 2 years early, I think. They went at 14. We all left at Yaroslavl at 14. But I went to Moscow and they went here. So they had 2 years here, they spent it, and they were saying that, hey, if you want it, there's that. So I had an opportunity to get to somewhere. So like I had at least somebody who I know remotely. But to hop on a plane to come here, it's very, very difficult. Now, of course, it's a different world. Yeah. Back then, it was... It's amazing that you say back then, although it was just, 10 years ago or so, but the world really has changed, yeah. With social media, with all this exposure to, a live bar and all those kind of things. Like, I didn't know the level. I had no idea. Yeah. I was basically on the call with like, hey, are these guys good? And this is what it is. Yeah, that's how you get to USHL. This is how you get to college. This is how you get to pro. And I said, okay. So I really just a simple trust. So for me, coming back to what I'm trying to do now is trying to help those kind of kids.
Yeah.
So I did successfully before COVID, and then with COVID, it was really difficult with the Russian visas, and especially now.
Yeah.
It's a complete mess, but we are actually getting back to it. So I'm helping right now with two guys to get to America first. Let's put it that way. I'm not hitting name teams or anything.
Yeah, no.
But for next year, so we're working on that. I think the easiest way is to know somebody. It's just really, really simple that. Or if somebody can give, an advice, there are a bunch of advisors. I don't know how to trust advisors because some of them are good. Some of them are used car salesmen. Mm-hmm. Not to offend any used car salesmen.
I think even used car salesmen out there get the youth.
Yeah. Seriously. But yes, so like that feel is, you have to have some sort of attachment.
Okay.
Because just blindly go there is really difficult. Even understand the level, because there's it's everything is so different. Just yesterday I was on a call for an hour just explaining how all the system works.
Mm-hmm. So what about like, from your role working with an agency, how much stock do you guys put into, like, obviously it's different because that is part of your job is to make those connections. So if you're a goalie or a player out there that doesn't necessarily have a direct connection, kids are always like, should I send, highlight reel tapes, emails, like should I go to showcases? Should I just go and sign up for tryouts? Like what, out of all of those options, what do you think is kind of like the hierarchy and like best middle and then like completely avoid?
I would say, to be honest, the way we work and the way I work, the way I'm assisting Gold Star is, I'm going to the games. I'm seeing a lot of games, and simple performance. Like that's the number one thing. The way you perform everything, and with goalies are a little bit different. Is as you know that if you look for a player, which I am looking for players as well, it's a bit different than goalies, right? It's not about, I think a lot of goalies are worrying about a lot about stats, yeah, which rightfully so. However, it's very a strange avenue, right?
Stats just get you like in the foot in the door.
Right.
But doesn't tell the whole story. Like there are a lot of goalies with 800 save percentage that are very good. They're just on bad teams.
Correct. Yeah.
But everyone, you're right. People do get hyper fixated on that. And I think what you said there is probably the highlight of the whole podcast is just going to be about playing well. And you never know who's watching and when that opportunity comes. And so many kids like take for granted that. And it's just like, just playing, don't worry about who's there. Like, you shouldn't be playing for things in the stands. You're playing for yourself. But showing up every night and giving it your best opportunity, like your best, sorry, best effort, that's what matters. And someone's going to see that. If you have talent, whether it's raw or it's very refined, someone's going to see that and take notice.
Absolutely. I mean, I talk to a lot of coaches, even after the game, whatever team comes in town, or if I'm whatever, if I'm talking to white team, I always ask like, oh, what's your opinion on overall, whatever the teams that you played, anybody that was there, that left the mark with any movement. And most of the time I'm telling you that the coaches, oh yeah, that kid on that team, you should take a look at it. It's amazing. And then you go and see that in person and you can evaluate for yourself. But I think the biggest overall, like the largest star size, a detail is all of like work, every moment, everything that when you're on the ice, there's no, even for me, like a simple rebound, redirect to the corner. If you're lazy, if you get up with a different foot, you're like, ugh,
yeah,
right away. So like details matter, because right now you have to agree, the sport is just getting so, so competitive.
Yeah.
So like even in the, you know, kids level, you know, mites level, if you work those habits and by the age of, you know, 14, you're it's automatic. Your approach to games, your approach to practices is going to be significantly different than a kid who's like, oh, I'm going to try now because somebody's watching.
Mm-hmm.
So that consistency in the work, consistency in the movement, understanding of the game, meaning I'm working, I'm enjoying the game, but I'm giving it my all. Yeah. Not saying I'm giving it my all, but I am giving it no matter what the stats are, which is really difficult as a goalie. But that's what it is. Sometimes you just in the bad games and bad stuff happens. But again, what I said earlier, yes, stats matter, but I'm looking the way I look at it. There's different goals. You know, there's bad goals, there's goals that you can't do anything about it. But even in those games, how do you react? How do you respond? We can't have a perfect game.
No.
It's impossible to for a whole career. I mean, we're gonna have bad games, that's normal. But how do you respond? That triggers a mental tough, mental strong, mental weak. If you're a really good goalie, but you're mental weak, that's a huge minus. And now you know, when we're bringing on our call, is it, how good is he? Yeah, he's good, but.
Yeah.
How is he gonna, in juniors, it's gonna be a tough life in juniors. If you go into minors, it's gonna be really tough in the life in minors. It's really difficult leagues. If you go further, it's even more difficult. You have to be able to be mental strong.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you're probably not gonna make it.
It's funny because like we as goalie coaches, and you as someone who works with agency, myself who does not an agency, but I help with other agencies, and I guess I do take it a mentorship role rather than an advisory role, but we have this conversation every single day, and I know parents out there, like, you know, you're concerned about your kid, and as you should, you know, there are thousands of goalies that we see, or hundreds to thousands a year that we have to look at, and it's the same conversation every time, and it's, what's their effort like? And it's, you know, well, it's that but. And there's a lot of really good goalies that have come across my desk for different, whether it's from college or from my scouting or different pro teams and junior teams. And there's always like, well, what's the but? And when there's no like, well, when there's no hesitation, that's like, okay, that's a good sign. But it's, you know, if you're listening or watching, like, think about being a little bit self-aware and like, and really reflective on yourself. And like, what is that? Do you have that thing that's holding you back? And it's not going, and we'll get into height and stuff, and you know, your height, you can't change. It's the things that leave that question mark are things that are that you can influence, whether that's hard work, whether that's mental toughness. Now, mental toughness is a little bit of a different beast. I think going through adversity helps build it, but also working with professionals and, you know, getting that experience. But we used to have this conversation every single day, and there's nothing more disappointing than like a goalie, you know, comes in and they'll be like, and I actually talked about this with one of my goalie mentors the other day. And when a goalie comes in, they're just like, we lost 6-2, our team was bad. And I'm like, well, yeah, but how are you? It's like, our team let me down. Well, I don't really care about your team. Like, tell me how you played.
Yeah.
And the goalies that are like, we lost 6-2, don't love the goal I gave up. I didn't think I played terrible, but I need those ones back. That to me, that's a mature goalie that gets it, that understands their role. They're willing to take some of the blame, but they're not putting it on someone else. They're taking ownership of themselves. But it's starting to be like harder and harder to kind of come across. I don't know if that's maybe just like now that we're old guys, so it's just like our generation that were just like, kids these days. I feel like old man's yelling at a cloud.
Exactly.
But it's true. And you talked about social media, it's completely different. And now, not only like when we were growing up, like Facebook was just coming out, like, and the only goalie things were like made like gear equipment groups, like GGSU and stuff like that.
I grew up in Russia.
Yeah, you didn't even have that. Yeah. But now, like, you go on the internet and you're just comparing yourself to so many different goalies, and you're seeing all this stuff. And I can see why people like get preoccupied on like what everyone else is doing rather than focus on themselves. But let's switch the page. So Russia right now seems to be having their moment of goaltending. In the last 5-6 years, it seems like it went like there was that like French Canadian, Western Canada, Finland, Sweden, and now Russia is the hotbed of goalies. So what's the secret? What's the secret sauce, man? Isn't the Russian gas that they always talk about? Like, what? But like, I know a little bit about the Russian system from what we've talked about and from like playing with other Russian, Russian and, you know, Eastern European and Belarusian and those kind of players and how it works. But for someone that grew up in that system, it's, you know, played, had success, been around other goalies that have had success. Like what separates what they're doing in Russia in terms of developing goalies compared to North America?
It's a long topic.
It's a
great topic. There's no secret, but it's a different approach that we in Russia have than we have here. It's really,
you can just say me. I'll be the representative for North America, and you can be the representative for Russia.
Well, I like to put myself in the middle of this. Yes, in the U.S., I think so the first question that you said, what's the secret? How is that all coming apart or coming together? Rather, it's a system. You know what I experienced is at the time probably wasn't. It's got its faults. You know, it's like a car. It's like a machine that is always going to have its faults, but it's going to move.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing where I think in the U.S. there's systems for players, for player development, but there's almost nothing for goalies. You know, a simple AAA team, you pay all this money to go as a player, and you get all this video, you get all the coaches constantly stopping the drill, showing you what to do, how to shoot or whatever you want to do, how to skate, where to position yourself, how to position yourself. What do they do for goalies?
If you're lucky, a goalie coach for 20 minutes once a week.
20 minutes once a week. And if you're lucky, I mean, realistically, you need to have much more than 20 minutes. You need to have an approach rather than a guy comes in and throws some pucks together like, oh, today we're going to do this. No, it's the same thing with what happening in Russia where all these guys coming about is a fully systematic approach. We know what we're working on. Mm-hmm. We know how we're working on, and repetition, repetition, repetition. Systems in Russia, of course, it's funded a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Like there's no Like, you can do private camps and stuff like that, but majority of it is what I experienced and what I was been part of.
Look, does the KHL team in charge of that? Is the city in charge of paying? It's mostly
it's a combination. So
it's a combination.
So they formulate their budget based on the city, based on the sponsors of the main KHL team. So, but that's what I actually wanted to talk about, because one of the things that I was thinking about this morning is like, because we're talking about on the ice a little bit, you know, where how does that system work? What kind of benefits can we bring? How is it going to function better? Because going on the ice with private coach, it's fantastic. If your parents, you know, carry a truck full of money over there, that's awesome. But again, it's the systematic approach. You do it once a month. Is that going to make a difference? Yeah. I mean, you're going to know a little bit. Is it every week? Okay. Is it twice a week? Okay. You know, now you can get into not just like, okay, when you push from the left to the right, you stop with the right, not with the left, you know? Now you can get into more details, because realistically, devil is in the details. You know, like, what's how to get to the next level? It's just humongous secret that nobody knows about. Is the perfect repetition all the time. And that's it, and that's how it works. I mean, it's locomotive. I mean, amount of players that they produce. It's like a factory. It's like just a huge factory that just pops players out just constantly, because approaches, you've got all the coaches are totally on the same page. You've got all the teams very on the same page. You have not just hockey. You have different types of activity when you do an on off ice. You've got acrobatics, flexibility. You have professionals coming in and putting the work into it. Yes, I mean, so I'm not going to make it, but it's a factory. It's going to go. You know, it's a successful factory because it's got a system, it's got an approach, and it's got a bam, bam, bam. For example, before season starts, we had a camp. You can say it's bad or good. Yeah, I don't know how, in terms of how good that it does. But again, when you're taking a look away, not on the player's eyes, it's like, oh, he's not going to make it. You're going to work him to death. Or you're going to take a look at, well, out of these guys, most of them going to make it. These guys going to probably end up in the surgery. Well, sorry. But again, you can tweak it a little bit and make it a little bit better. But before season, every team goes on a camp. You know, a camp is four practices a day. Four practices a day. Not all the practices are lifting weights. So you have a combination. You're developing in different factors of players' overall abilities. So you have probably a little warm-up run, doing something like this in the morning. Then you've got an ice practice. You've got a gym, you know, lifting and building strength. And at the end, you have a fourth practice is more of, you know, either playing handball, you're playing basketball, you're playing soccer. All these things, they're going to help develop all kinds of different muscles and abilities. Coordination, I think, is one of the biggest factors. Now, in the kids that I work with, none of them are coordinated. Like, we can seem to find, like, it's very choppy. Nobody understands their body. And again, back then, because we were outside, because we played all kinds of sports, we just had an ability. We were so grouped together and we understood how the muscles work. It's a huge advantage on the ice. Huge advantage on the ice. And again, systematic approach. Boom, you get your camp before season. All this power that you built, all these things that you built, then you go into season twice, two practices a day. You got practice in the morning, off ice, then you go to school.
Is this like this? What age group does this typically start out?
Gosh, I started probably 8, if I remember, maybe earlier.
So like really intensive, really like rest of right away.
Not all the schools, I want to clarify, not all the schools are like that. Mm-hmm. I was in the Olympic Reserve School. Locomotive is the you know, the way it's set up is the Olympic Reserve School. So really over there, that's why you have a machine of that moves on and develops players. You have an enormous amount of players that come out from Lokomotiv, and you know, it's just, and again, it's all the involvement and the clear goal of the academy path.
Yeah.
It's very similar to like a UK when you have a Premier League, you have a main club and you have all these academies, and it's the same approach. So if the main team develops a player, now that team is able to sell to different clubs.
Yeah.
They develop a player and then in junior level, they're really good, but some reason it doesn't fit the bill in their club because let's say they're stacked.
Yeah.
Different team looks at it, it's like, we want them. Here's the money. You have to pay the money. Now that team that wants that player pays the money to that club. Now it's not just wasted money that
they
put all this. Now they actually earn money for that.
So it's ultimately the towns, the communities, the sponsors, and the main team is investing in the long game, which does make sense. Which I think North America used to be like that when in like the original 60s, NHL teams had local area rights of players.
Oh, I don't know that.
So like if you were from Montreal or if you were from Quebec, Montreal owned your rights. If you were from Ontario, Toronto, and then same thing like Boston and stuff as well. Now on the surface, like never being exposed to the Russian system, how much of it is just like a numbers game where if you just get kids, like, cause we have this mind, like this idea or this mindset of like Russia being like the Cold War, like Rocky, Ryan, you know what I mean? But like, how much of it is just like weeding? I mean, it's weird because like, we want to like, kind of like see like the Russian system of like, you know, beating kids down and breaking their spirits. And, you know, if you get hurt, you're done. But to be fair, like that's kind of how it works here too. And so, but like how much of it is just like a numbers game? Like, is it, if you're getting 100 goalies into the system, okay, like one of them, two of them are probably going to go high, or is it like we're putting in all the effort to each individual kids, and then as they get older, if they don't have that skill level, if they aren't showing promise, then we start to cut them loose?
Well, it depends on the age, right? It depends on what talent you got there, but it seemed to be doing just fine. I mean, I'm 97. So I remember 97s playing in KHL, 98s, three of them playing in KHL, 99s, two of them playing in KHL, 2000 is backing him up, actually. It seems to be all right. So again, that what you were talking about is maybe something shifted, or exposure, or their willingness to move, or doing something that in the couple of years that you seem, because I was just looking at yesterday, you've got New York Islanders, you've got Colorado,
mm-hmm.
you got New York that was completely Russian too.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I mean, they're just dominating, you know, like you have two guys in Colorado is Prosvetov and Georgiev.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Georgiev went from New York as well, but you have Shesterkin and Georgiev used to be in there. You've got Islanders, you've got Sorokin and Varlamov, which is from Yaroslavl, but he was in Yaroslavl. It's wow. I mean, just right there.
Yeah.
And of course, there's other guys in the systems in different teams, and maybe I'm forgetting somebody, but that's a large amount, you know, of top goalies, meaning not they're somewhere, but they're number ones. I mean, Vasilevsky, I don't know who's backing him up. I don't think the Russian Gustafsson.
No, it's Canadian Tompkins. Tompkins and Johansson.
Whoever, but I'm just saying like and again, something that we just briefly talked about is the quality, right? The quality is not just being, you know, it's, we're not somewhere finding them in the minors. which there are some, but you've got a lot of them just going boom, peak, boom.
Do you think that's just because being a Russian, or definitely would be, well, being European or Russian, you have the top guys. If you're, if you're a goalie that's not going to be a dominant goalie in the NHL, you would probably just stay back in Russia, right? So you, the ones that are coming over to North America are the best of the best.
Well,
and so does that, versus North America, it is harder for like a Canadian or an American player just due to import rules and all those things. So it's easier to like to muck around in the American League or the East Coast if you aren't going to be that top tier right. guy.
Well, I don't think so, because like I said, there are some in the minors. And then not just completely up there. I'm just saying in some period of time, they end up right over here. So Vasilevskiy took some, it took him a little bit. You know,
he wasn't there Tampa. For a bit, yeah.
He wasn't with Tampa for a little bit. He was in Syracuse for a little bit. Same thing with Varlamov. Varlamov went when he was, I believe, 18 from Lokomotiv, where he earned his number one there. He went here and he... They didn't put him in the main team. They put him in AHL, and he battled around there for 2 years before he actually had the main job or even the backup job. So I don't think so. But I'm not sure about that. But I think when the biggest difference is between, you know, the North American. Or, you know, I'm not going to say about European, but they have a little bit better conditions than in Russia. But I think what all of us Russians experience is, it's kind of like you're either in or you're completely out of the game. So what that means is, if you look in the States, you go through like a AAA, you go to junior team, you go to college. If you're good enough, you're going to go to the, you know, you have a shot. If you're not going to make it, you have a degree. You go to your office job and you're going to be just fine. Now, for Russians, now it's to start to change a little bit. But again, when I was growing up, school didn't really exist. Like, it was nothing. I mean, again, I'm not going to talk about how I was doing in school in Russia. And I wasn't expected when I moved to actually go to school and do some work and actually have to bring home work. What's that? I've never done that in my life.
There's a Russian goalie that currently plays in the KHL. I know that stopped going to school when he's 12 years old.
Yeah, and that's very normal. Like, that's normal.
That's like, but you're listening right now and you're a 12-year-old kid in you know, middle of Saskatchewan. You're probably like, well, if they're not going to school and they're just playing hockey.
But the problem is with that, that's all great when you make it to the top, which is, you probably a number guy. You can tell me about more what the percentage is like.
Not high.
It's not high. If you're out of that high percent, you're going to be on the street.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of guys end up there being really, really good, really good. And something happens and they're out of the roster. They're out of the game and they can't get back. And now they find themselves, oh, I was just there. I'm drafted. I'm this, but nobody needs me anymore. And I don't have education. The only thing I know is hockey, and I go and do coaching, and that's all. And I have no other options. But then here, you have options. You have something that's like that. Here, over there, it's really, really difficult.
So it's like, a lot, like one system, but also I guess like what's the saying, like you burn the boats. There's no plan B for almost all the kids, or a lot of kids, like
who's going that route.
Like, you are either going to give it your all, or you're gonna have to not play sports at all, or not play high level sports, because you're gonna go on and pursue some sort of, you know, work or education or trade or however, which just makes sense, you know. Like, I mean, sometimes, like, I look at where I am now, and I'm like, well, I'm glad I went to college, and like, you know, I'm going to be, like, I have a doctorate degree and all these things. But then, like, part of my, something in the back of my brain was like, I wonder if I just didn't have a plan B, would I have...
It's a scary
thing. Would I change things? Would I... I don't know. Like, and I don't know. It's hard, but I think that I definitely think that that fire and just knowing and understanding, like, this is it. This is my opportunity.
That's a very good point. And I think one of those things is that it's hunger. When we talk about hunger, it's a different type of hunger when you have, when you're a deer and you know where the food is, when the planted food is. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're completely wild, and if you're not going to find anything, you don't have your senses right, you don't, like, if you're not going to eat, you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, that's the thing. For them, it's what Bobrovsky, you've got Sorokin, you've got all these guys. If they're not going to make it, I don't know where they're going to go. Like,
yeah.
Where are they going to go? There's a lot of kids who graduate from academies, mm-hmm. who's able to be coach and who are able to do whatever. But of course, we all want to be the top. We want to be, most of us, I think. But if something is not happening, something doesn't work, the height, the injury, the coach that you didn't have a good tension with, that's it. Like, your whole life, as a, not just your professional career in hockey, but your whole livelihood depends on the pillars of that are very, very shaky.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I said, there's a lot of kids who are really, really good and who don't make it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of kids who are really, really good who make it.
Yeah.
So, because of based on different reasons, but that's why I say it's just very fine ground. Mm-hmm. And to be in the mix of NHL and to be out of the mix, you think, wow, that's a big difference. But really,
small.
And it's fine details. And it's kind of circling back to what I said into about what's the secret. Maybe the secret is the details.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing about, like, to put everything you got to be the best, not just on the ice, because it's not just the ice.
Mm-hmm.
If you are really good on the ice, but you are a very, very difficult person, very difficult to be around, not able to communicate really well, just a sketchy guy, that could be the avenue. It's a game. It's again that pillar,
mm-hmm.
that could just fall and you're not going to make it.
Yeah.
So all those details, I'm going to be doing really well in school. I'm going to do really well on the ice. I'm going to not go and have a burger in McDonald's, but actually going to have the meal because I want to be somewhere. It's really, really difficult where I think, When I was talking to Ivan, and he kind of like thinking about all these things that he has to do, and I've been with they had a used to have a camp before season when I was already in college. These guys were getting ready for the NHL season, and I was, because I'm a local kid too, and they needed the shooter tutor, so I'm like, I'll take it. And so I was getting ready for the season as well. I was getting ready for the season at a very, very different pace,
yeah.
than them. These guys are an absolute machines. Like, just thinking of this is that's it. I mean, they're practicing 6 hours a day, and then they go in season and they just work on them. Everything is work, because you can't. I mean, of course, they know how to party too, but, you know, everything is with the idea, okay, I need to take care of my body. I need to know what I eat. I need to know what I watch, who I communicate to, because all these things really matter at the end. And I'm looking at all this, and this is what the guy's living in. And that's where a lot of people who say they want to be the best, they want to go further, I don't think a lot of people understand what it actually takes to do that. And it's easy to, not easy, but when once you jump in, that's great. It's awesome. You're in it. But what it's really difficult is to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all these things, what I was talking about, click in.
Yeah. A lot of people want it.
Yeah.
Or they think, a lot of people think they're working hard. I had this conversation a couple days ago where I was fortunate, where I went to a goalie school, small ice pad area, but there were always goalies older than me and better than me going through and training. So I remember, like, you know, the younger kids would always skate, you know, earlier, like 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and then, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10. Now you're getting the triple A, the junior A, the pro guys coming in there. And I remember, like, begging my dad to stay, like, no, I need to watch. Cause I thought, like, even goalies that are playing like junior B, you know, when you're a 12, 13 year old kid, like someone playing, a 20 year old playing junior B is like crazy, because they're doing all the things that you can't do yet because you haven't learned them.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, seeing it and seeing goalies that are at a higher level and being exposed to it is a driving factor. That's one of the reasons, like, I like the European development model, where you have academies, you have the tiers, the hierarchy, because you get exposed to it. You know, speaking to Yane the other week about what they're doing in HIFK Helsinki, is they allow their, you know, say the U12s will get games with the U14s. The U14s will get games and practices with the U16s. And that happens. It doesn't happen as much in North America unless, you know, someone's sick or there's an injury. And you don't get that little taste to, one, drive that hunger, but also be like, okay, like, I am not there yet. I need to elevate my game. I work with a couple of goalies in the UK, and they're now, like, you know, they would be 16. Yeah, so 16-year-olds. And they're starting to get some minutes with the elite leagues and the second tier leagues. And for me, it's like, you know, they're all fired up to hear it. You know, for me, it's like, okay, so what did you learn out of this? Like, I'm so happy that you're getting this opportunity, but, like, what'd you learn? They're like, well, the shots are really quick and I felt behind the play. It's like, okay, so that, what does that mean? Like, you got to get faster. You got to do this. Like, that means, you know, over the next 2 or 3 years, this is the jump we're trying to make. And I think that that's an important part that we don't get. It's not built in for us here. You know, like, when I do, you know, what do Yannick calls corporate goalie coaches. So for me as a corporate goalie coach, you know, like, I do try sometimes to set up my sessions where if I know I have a younger goalie who's showing promise, I want them all with older goalies that are one, good people, but also, like, push the pace and work hard, because I want them to see that. I want that to rub off on them, versus, you know, like, sometimes if I have goalies that have bad attitudes, like, they don't get those privileges, because it's not going to do them any good, and it's just going to hurt the whole session.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I remember that we used to play against 96 or 98 all the time, being 97. So you either play it up or you play it down. So for all the ages to work. And I think that's a great opportunity, you know, to see where you are and where do you need to go, the next steps. And I think, again, Aaron, just kind of over this podcast, I'm just more thinking about the details now, because it really, when you think about it, and I completely agree with you, where you want your younger kid to go with the older kid who tries really hard. Now, it's very easy to say, oh, there's younger kids here, I'm going to go not as hard. It's the same thing again. If you professional, if you think of that, this is where I need to be, that I care for what I do, and I take pride of work I do, it doesn't matter who's around me, it doesn't matter what circumstances I'm in. If I'm working, I'm giving it, boom, I'm working it. I'm doing quality repetition. I'm not doing, you know, half here, half there. So those kind of things really matter, and the kids pick up on this. Where they see this, and that generates the driving behavior. Where now, if they're gonna put a younger kid, you want to put it with the older kid.
Yeah.
But what if that older kid's gonna have, like, hey, that's bad. Now here you can skip. Now it's a bad habit. Now it's not a good model where you want to take it. So that's where, again, that comes in.
And that's our role of coaches, is to know our athletes and pick and choose. And I know, like, sometimes the older guys will be like, oh, I don't want to skate with the younger. But remember, you were also that younger kid. two, also take it as like a badge of honor that we as coaches are entrusting you, and we're like, hey, like, we want you to be a good role model. But also, when you get in the net in the training, it's just you in the puck. Even if you're skating with a 9-year-old and you're a 20-year-old, doesn't matter. It's you are on the ice. Your job is to get better and to be consistent. And like, that's something that I was fortunate that I was a part of a system, a private hockey school, mm-hmm. not like academic wise, just training wise, where Bujan, the guy that owns it, set it up that way where I was able to skate with older goalies, but then I became the guy that the younger players were with. And I knew that. And like, details for me, like you say that, and I think about myself, I'm like, yeah, like I was too detail oriented. But I also think that like, I wouldn't have been successful if I was any less detail oriented. But I think of like how neurotic I was, and I was like, this probably wasn't healthy in the long run. But I was successful. I was successful not because I was a phenomenal skater or phenomenal athlete. I was very good because I understood things, and I worked. And I can say it now because I look back, but I worked so incredibly hard. I actually like did too much. Like, I didn't recover well enough, and that caused problems like down the road. But like, I worked so hard because I had to. Whereas I think a lot of you know, kids and even like teenagers and young adults, it's just that, like, it's like, take off the governor, like take off what's holding. Just go for it. Just take that next step. Like, what are you doing? You'd mentioned it before. Like, what are you doing when you come to the rink? It's one thing to work hard for an hour of the day, but what's the rest of your day looking like? Are you paying attention at school? You know, like, are you stretching? It doesn't have to be hardcore, but like, instead of just watching TV at night, like, are you just stretching while you're watching TV? You know, like, little things. Like, are you, you know, like, yeah, like pro guys, like, you go on the internet, you always see how like hard, like, all the pro guys are partying, but they pick and choose their battles. And that's the biggest thing, is they go out when the job's done. You know, they also earn that. You know, if you're playing junior B hockey or tier 3 hockey, and you're just satisfied with being a hockey beauty, then that's all you're going to be, is a hockey beauty. But if you really truly want to take that next step, then you're going to be that role model of the team that's like, fellas, we're not going out because we didn't win. Or, yeah, I'll come out, but like 11 o'clock, I'm out. It's my bedtime, and I'm hitting the gym at tomorrow at 9. You know, like, making those like little things that those tangibles, those details are so like incredibly important, that, and we know the kids that take those steps, and we see it. And the thing is too, is like, when you were like, we can think about when you were young, because we thought that we were like smarter than the coaches. Like, coaches didn't know. They know. We know what you're doing. We keep aware. Like, the thing is, like, I follow all my goalies on social media. I know the stupid stuff they're up to. I know when they're doing dumb stuff. Yeah. But I also had a mentor that did the same thing to me. And so, like, it's just, I'm glad that I had that and I was exposed. I made mistakes, because now I can, like, because now I can look at my guys and be like, hey, you should probably delete that.
Yeah. But I think, again, it's just where you want to be. And that's why I said it doesn't have to be an objective to be an NHL. Like, that's, I think it's normal. Like, if you have to pick and choose what you want. If you're clearly with yourself thinking that this is my goal and I'm going to do whatever it takes, mm-hmm. then the whole mentality shifts. If you're thinking like, hey, it's going to happen. If it's not going to happen, man, that's all right. Mm-hmm. Then it's just a completely different approach.
It is.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
But you just have to pick and choose. You can't say, today I want it, and tomorrow, well, everybody's going out, so I'm going to go too.
Yeah.
That doesn't work that way. And, you know, not to go too much into the, you know, my personal life, but everything is like, it doesn't, I don't know how to explain it, but everything kind of goes together, mm-hmm. somehow, some universe. It just, if you give enough, if you care, if you go, if you do those stupid dumb things that you think it's really dumb when you go to bed at a certain time, that not past midnight, and when you recover, when you do stretching. Somehow, in some game, when you think that that puck's going in, that guy whiffs on the shot. Somehow, it hits your blade. Somehow, it hits your top of your glove, and it goes away. Or it hits the post, and it doesn't go in, it goes out.
Yeah.
And maybe it's too much of me for, you know, kind of overthinking it, but I really, truly believe in that ratio of how much you put in. It just somehow it gives that back out.
But that's like everything in life. And one, like, you make your own luck and all these things, you make your own opportunities. But like, even like now, it's the same thing. Like if I go to bed at midnight and wake up at 6 and I'm tired and I go to coach and I'm miserable and I'm not being a good coach, like, that doesn't benefit my goalie. And it ultimately comes back and bites me in the butt. Same as with an athlete. You know, if you stay up late or whatever it is, just because you want to watch Netflix or whatever, you know, play Fortnite or whatever kids play these days, and then you have a crappy practice.
Yeah.
Like, and then because of that, you know, your mood's bad, and that carries over, and then you have a crappy game, and that happened to be the game when just, you know, you or I or some scout was there. Or not, you know, in most young ages, it's not even a scout, it's coaches. Like, other coaches talk about, we talk about our coaches, like, how this person look, okay, this person's interested in coming, like, what are your thoughts? And if it's like, well, they're a little grumpy, or I saw them once, and they did not impress me. And then, like, that's, you know, not as a kiss of death for your career, but maybe for the next step. Like, maybe for you making that jump from, you know, AA to AAA, like, maybe that was it, just because it's like little things, and it all matters in the long run, and that's why, like, we can't take any sort of day or opportunity for granted. And you know, obviously you're not going to always be unbelievable, but as long as you are doing the things to be the best and to give yourself the opportunity to be unbelievable, that is what matters, and it compounds. And, you know, you do that for 10, 12 years, mm-hmm. you're probably going to be in a good spot. And I say that, like, when parents are like, hey, like, what do you think of my 12-year-old? I'm like, tell me, like, let's talk in 8 years, and I'll tell you I'm pretty good. But right now, I don't know. Like, there's still, like, I don't know. Like, what happens if they turn 16 and maybe they just want to, like, race cars or something? Like,
yes.
I don't know.
So, you know, it's quite interesting that you say that, because now, again, because everything's moving forward, everything's just changing. At this moment, we're looking at 2010s for the agency.
Yeah.
So you tell me, and I
think 2010, it's crazy.
You have 13-year-old
kids that weren't even born when I was, like, drafted in the OHL.
But that's the thing, like, you have to pick up. And that's why, you know, it's what's really difficult. And again, it doesn't mean anything that, you know, somebody's looking at 13-year-old or 16-year-old. But I'm just telling you how young the agency, the scouts, start to look at the kids. 13-year-old. You don't know. Again, like you said, maybe in a couple of years, he finds himself to be a painter. And then he goes in a completely different route. And all this work that you've done, you know, scouting him, doing the reports, doing the looks, and goes away. But that's why, when we're talking about pillars, it's not just hockey. Mm-hmm. It's this. How does it all function? And that's what is a difficult job to do, to what we do. But that's what I'm saying. When you in the details, when you're thinking about overall goal, what you want to be. Because, you know, frankly, like, realistically, the way I look at it, if you're playing AAA, you want to get somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not an NHL, but, like, the, you know, NCAA, the USHL,
yeah,
is the goal. And again, it's so close, but it's really far.
Yeah.
So details really matter. You start caring of the process overall, not just I care today, care tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
2010s, 13-year-old, and we have to make a decision who's going to be a a future NHL star. I don't know how to do it.
I think, like, if you, like, we don't
try to do it.
This didn't, like, hit me until, yeah, probably until I first went pro. Maybe a second year pro. But, like, every year, there's someone trying to take your job.
Mm-hmm.
Every single year. So if you're 2010, the 2011s, at some point, you're going to be playing against each other that bubble junior age. And they're going to try to take your job. And then the 2012s and 2013s. And it's just going to go and go and go forever. So, like, you can't rest till you're done. And that's honestly the thing, too. And like, and that's a whole other discussion for, like, for basically my therapist or psychologist. Like, you know, like, but that was my mentality. Like, when I played, was like, I just didn't stop until the end. And now I put all my effort into my school and my businesses and my coaching. And, you know, like, on the surface, well, my girlfriend would say it, and it's not a lie, but I'm a workaholic. But now my work, rather than being like, my work towards being an athlete, is my work towards being successful and what I want to be successful. And so everything carries over, but that's also a reason why I was able to be a successful goalie. Like, if I was even like 5% less invested in it, probably wouldn't have gone anywhere. And because, like, all I had was my effort and I had opportunity, I had great parents able to afford and provide all the things that the tools that aided all the hard work and put all the pieces together. But, like, yeah, like, you can't. The thing is like, you'll never know if you're going to make it. You just when you turn 25, when you turn 30, when you turn 40, when you look back, can you honestly say, like, did you do it all? Did you give it your best effort? And that's like the most important part. Like, for me, you know, sometimes, like, well, like, Jamie, you were called up to the NHL, but you never played. Well, yeah, it sucks. Like, I would have loved to have got some minutes, but I also, I actually could not have worked any harder than I did.
Yeah. I think the true honest thing is to be true to yourself.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, when you know what the expression is, to look, you know, look yourself in the mirror and just ask, have I done it all?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can skew it a little bit, like, oh yeah, I could have, or like, you really think that you have done, but sometimes you're just, you know, lying to yourself. But I think that's a whole process, and that's what I'm trying to tell. That's a whole approach now this second semester to other kids that I work with, is I'm gonna tell them how, and I'm gonna implement the little program, and something that we talked about, you know, and earning a, I think the biggest thing is, like, habits. So that's where I was trying to figure it out, how to help them a little bit on this, and I came up with this exclusive only content here. But really, the habits. So if you're looking at this, take 2 weeks. So if you have a calendar, you have a whatever way of you want to put it together, at the end of every day, you earn yourself a check mark or plus or whatever you want to do. So, but that's the thing, you have to be completely honest to yourself. So, and you can identify the, you know, the objectives, the parameters, and how you want to look at it. But to me, it would be, I did really well in school. I participated. I did the homework. I prepared. I did all the things that necessary to be the best, to get to where I need to go. I ate well. I didn't do any stupid things. I got to bed at the right time. Did I practice really hard? Did I just sit around when the coach explaining the drill for 15 minutes or whatever, did I just sit there and just completely zoned out because I'm not interested in explaining the drill? The only thing I have to do is to sit there and, you know, wait for the puck to come in. Or I actually was thinking, I was stretching, I was doing those kind of things, because you have to utilize that time, you know? So did I practice really hard? Did I give it all or I didn't? And only after that, when you get home, you can earn yourself a check mark.
Yeah.
Now, if you do those things for 2 weeks, that's even, like, if for a week, let's say, and then you have a game at the end of the week. So sometimes, I even remember myself, I had all kinds of, I was so I was not nervous, but it was like excitement and nervous and being like light in the heart. And you're like, almost like you can't feel that. I actually sometimes miss that feeling. You really do. Because after that, you just don't have, yeah. I haven't had that feeling since I stopped playing. But sometimes when you don't have that confidence, you can think of and look at your board you did. Mm-hmm. And if you have all the check marks, there's supposed to be no hesitation of like, am I going to perform well? Well, I did the best as I could to the week. Then the game's going to be good. Yeah. The game's going to be good. And you do everything that at the game, you earn yourself a check mark. Next week starts. And usually, like I said, 2 weeks, you build a habit. Mm-hmm. After that, it becomes a natural spin. Yeah. And if you think about it, and season is quite long, mm-hmm. or quite short, depends on how you look at it. But that season, if you take in it and you just pop, 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 doing those 2 weeks and you're doing week by week, whatever the weeks amount of 22 weeks in the season or whatever, how much further are you going to be? Rather than, am I doing well? I don't know. You have to be honest to yourself. Boom. Earn it. Now you have a visual. If you didn't earn it, if you didn't earn the mark, then all of that crosses out. Mm. All of it. And you have to start right back because you can't take days off.
Yeah. All right. Three questions. And first question. What was your first set of goal a year?
McLean. The Russian one. Well, that's the thing. In Russia, we didn't have to pay. Oh, 1 second. The first one. I want to say that again. It wasn't McLean. It was a Coho. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, it's a Coho.
Yeah. I forgot. It was black Cohos. Black Cohos that my dad went to Moscow because we didn't have any goalie gear.
Yeah.
Bought it somewhere of some guy on, God, I didn't even know, on some sort of a market, like a farmer's market. And he had them on sitting there and they're complete awful. But I still remember to this day, those Cohos, man, it was just very tiny. It was quite cute, and I had a lot of pictures with it. I had my face covered in some pimples. I got an allergy, and I have old green or whatever. And just standing like this, whole set in there, it was just, what do you say? Because I don't think of that.
That's why I ask you. That's why I'm amazing. That's why I like to ask that. Now, next question. Was there any sort of gear modification that for you, it's like, I couldn't do without, like, whether you, the way you sharpen your skates, the way you tie it, like toe laces, like, did you have any weird intricacies with your gear?
Well, depends. So if you're talking about when I was younger, and again, when you just start out, you really don't know. When you develop yourself, you start liking things. When I was young, I didn't have any other option rather than what my dad brought.
Yeah.
And then, once I start getting older and start playing in the team sponsored, so they just give you that gear. So in Lokomotiv, I've never had to pay for any of the gear, which is awesome. Also, there's all kinds of weird stuff came in too from older kids and whatever, would pass the gear out. And, so I had new gear, or could be used gear, almost every year because you grow or so. When I start getting into like 14s, I start to make different things. I think the first time I switched to tucking my chest protector into pants, and I don't think I would ever untuck it now.
Really?
I don't think I would tie it. I had the suspenders. I felt so much solid. And when I got to juniors, I start wearing the double neck.
Okay.
Which I sewed myself. I did a lot of modifications myself. My grandpa taught me how to sew and do all these things. And actually, it was really helpful. I redid my gloves when they broke down, when the palm of it just went this way. I opened it all up and I did some stuff, glue it all together.
Oh, interesting.
But cleaned it all the time. I had And when I was still playing at Locomotive, I had beautiful sets of Brian's Beast.
Ooh, the Beast.
Trappers. The best ones. They still hurt me over here, but I remember those days, and it just seriously, every time something flies left, you're like, you're reacting with like, yeah, I don't really want to go to the shoulder there. It's terrible. But yeah, and when I got obviously to juniors or to college, it was the dream come
true.
A dream come true, really, with sets that everything I ever wanted with Brian's, that I always stick to Brian's, but really liked it. I did try different gear when I was younger, but you know, Bowers, I was all right, but I always wanted to get back to that Beast set. Yeah. And even in my last sets, I had Eyes right over here. So I actually copied Colin Delia.
Yeah.
All right. However you pronounce his last name. I think his gear is absolutely stunning. When he played for Chicago,
yeah,
and I saw it, I was like, that. So I worked with, I think, Chris, his name, from Brian's, and I said, do everything like you did for Delia, but just add those Eyes like this, and it came out, to me, spectacular. Couple gloves that I got, must have if you have an ability. That's it was a complete game changer, because my gloves were always hurting. My hands were always hurting. So I got the practice palm and whatever, two practice palms, and I want Trapper for the game ready. Yeah. Best thing ever happened to me.
Yeah, I had to have it. I was a practice palm and then a pro palm guy.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Last question: what advice would you give to your younger self? Could be anything, doesn't have to be hockey related, just any advice.
That's a very, very good question. I have a funny advice and then actual advice. I think it's quite difficult, honestly. I would say, for funny advice, is actually try to not date anybody and just have fun with somebody and just enjoy not being in the relationship. But I feel like if my whole life I was in the relationship, the longest I've ever been not in a relationship was a week and a half or so. but in true colors, I think it was really, really, I think some people may say that their career was quite difficult, and not everybody's career was it smooth as ride and stuff. My career, when I look back at it, was exceptionally difficult. Always, of course, we always deal with some level of uncertainty. But to me, especially when I moved 14, like I said, to go to Moscow. I lived by myself. My grandma was visiting me, just having somebody there. Again, you mentioned that the guy who you know from Russia, he didn't go to school at 12. I did go to school, but four periods. And sorry, I have a practice. We have to go. Which that wasn't true. Our practice were at 8 p.m. But anyway, I passed it all. Great. But it was exceptionally difficult, but it gave me so many opportunities to see the world, to go to Finland, to see a lot of, because I was used to practice and had camps in Finland all the time. You know, tournaments in different countries. But I really had a difficult time with uncertainties. And I think that caused a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot, but some health problems, just because I was so sure of myself that I'm good enough to be in, but there's a lot of reasons that here and there didn't work out. I think just to calm down a little bit and trusting the process, but not overly But that's the thing. I don't even know how to say that, because exactly what we talked about, the whole thing for me is, if I wouldn't make it, I know what would be back if I come back. It would be going to factory, and I don't have an education. I don't know what I would be. I would be a lost soul. And like many of the kids that, you know, when you hang out when you're younger, I mean, I know of that. I know, follow them on Instagram and so, but, and I am thinking that one step away, if Bell Tire wouldn't work out, if the legendary Chris Corey wouldn't take me on the team, if I wouldn't meet Igor Larionov and he wouldn't help me a little bit, and that's it. It's just over. Nothing like, I'm sitting here in Grand Rapids having beautiful wife, beautiful daughter, and I'm able to afford a house, all those things, and nothing would exist. And it's, I think it's a scary thing. It really is for me. But trusting the process, and exactly what I was talking about. If you do those things, if you're honest to yourself, you give it all, somehow, I don't know how, I've got no answer on this, somehow it guides you to people, guides you to places, and it's never given, but it feels like it's guided.
Yeah. Well, Roman, very deep, very interesting. But thank you for joining us this episode. Now, anything you'd like to promote, comment? I know you work with agency, whether you want to put your email or anything out there, it's completely up to you. If not, we can wrap it right up.
I'm working with Gold Star Agency. So fantastic agency. I really enjoy working with them. I work closely with Dan Milstein and Vlad Spector. Fantastic guys. I'm going to see him next week in Detroit. And really, there's a lot of exposure. I can say that there's a lot of exposure, but we can get our eyes everywhere. So I would never, I always, like Dan would say, always pick up a phone. We're the type of people where I always pick up my phone. I never going to ignore it or whatnot. I mean, anybody who would reach out up. And if you standing on your skates and you're able to skate, I'm going to take a look at you. So if you're anybody interested in that and getting exposure like this, it's a fantastic opportunity. And I can tell you, I didn't know power of agents, some agents, not everybody, that what difference they can do. And what lack of difference they can also do if you have the wrong agents, which some people, and I'm sure that you came across, of people who have agents and they absolutely don't do anything. And I can tell you that I've been a part of the, I've been exposed to those kind of people as well, where it's just, I didn't believe in the approaches. I didn't believe in the work ethic, and I didn't believe in the system of that. And very glad that I am with Gold Star now.
Awesome. Thanks everyone for listening, watching. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. You know the drill. We'll see everyone next week.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.